You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody, and I have a feeling you are happy on this Monday. It is October 28th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It's an overcast day and getting a little warmer outside, and hope you all had a fantastic weekend. I know I did. Took in lots and lots and lots of college football, NFL football, even some college basketball over the weekend as well. And my God, I don't remember it's been weeks. I almost fully forgot what a Victory Monday felt like. And here we are in the studio at ESPN 106.7, the Auburn Opelika sports leader, and we get to talk about an Auburn football win. Can I hear it? Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Excited to talk about this today. As Auburn goes on the road, beats Kentucky, their first SEC win, there is life in the building in the Auburn football program. And joining me in the studio, as he does every Monday and Friday, Uncle T-Bone, he's wild, he's crazy, he's your favorite. What's up, my man? Good to see you. Happy Monday.
Oh, happy Monday, Jacob. Good to be seen. All smiles on the plains. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. We got a W and got off the schneid, and I couldn't be happier about it. Man, did we need that one right there. Great game by the Auburn Tigers. Still have some things you got to clean up, obviously, we saw, but getting the W on the road in the SEC, and that's always impressive, especially these days. We knew the Tigers could do it. We've seen all year how close they were to doing it. We've seen them multiple times jabba it up and not do it. And Jarquez Hunter said, not today, Uncle T. I'm taking control of this ball game. Give us a call at 334-321-1390 or text us 334-784-1067 here to On the Line, the show that tells it like it is and holds nothing back. That's ESPN, Auburn Opelika, Jacob Goetz. And I couldn't be happier, man. We really needed a W. And I don't know what that's going to do for the rest of the season, what it's going to do for the trajectory of the Hugh Freeze career here at Auburn. I'm not so sure that that was actually a proof of concept in totality. And I don't really care, because as a fan, I just wanted a W, and we got it.
Yeah, I think you're on the right path there. And those are conversations that we get to have as the week goes on and as the next couple of weeks go on, right? If Auburn is able to pile wins together and start going in the right direction. But, man, we've just got to sit and boast a little bit. We've got to sit and just enjoy what happened on Saturday, because – out of 8 tries, that's only the 3rd time that we've been able to win a football game this year. And you put it in that perspective, and it's kind of depressing. But good news is, Auburn did win the football game. And I'm with you. You're going to have fans, and there always are, right? In losses, everybody's critical. Everybody's critical in a loss. But there are still a lot of fans, and I'm not just talking Auburn fans. I'm talking sports fans. Oh, well, we won, but it really wasn't in the right way. Oh, we won, but that was just a bad team. Oh, we won, but it doesn't really matter. Auburn fans are not in a position, and Auburn football was not in a position, to be picky. We said this early on in the season, and it is still true. Auburn fans cannot afford and are not in a position to be picky about any sort of victory in college football. And so a 24-10 win on the road at Kentucky, yeah, it's all smiles around here. And you could see that and you could hear that with Hugh Freeze in his weekly press conference today. Don't know if you got a chance to listen to that, Uncle T-Bone. It was good. I was there. And I mean, the vibes were just extremely high. And nobody is sitting in this studio or on any radio station or any journalist or any fan. Nobody's saying that Auburn is back, that Auburn just won the national championship. But the fact that they finally got a win, I don't care if it was against the Auburn High junior varsity team, a win right now is a win, and it will carry, I hope, a lot of weight and go a long way for this football program.
I'm just happy for the players mostly. I mean, you could see, you could just almost see it in the comments and the eyes, especially the upperclassmen who've just, or the, even the ones who transferred in and spent a few years in this program and seen the struggles and everything that's come along with the last 4 or 5 years of Auburn football. It just mainly has not been very positive. And I'm sure that locker room was lit. I have not seen any videos of it after the game. And so you can confirm that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I even asked Hugh Freeze that today. That was my question to him. I said, look, Hugh, I've seen a ton of photos and videos of you and the team and things like that. I said, the feeling looked like you guys were relieved, right? It looked like relief that you finally won. And he kind of chuckled and he was like, yeah. And he said what you said, happy for the players, happy for the fans, happy for the program. And look, you can be negative about this if you want to, and you can say, well, it's just depressing and crappy that we're here and that we're having to celebrate wins over Kentucky. Get out of that purist mindset, okay?
I agree with that.
Be happy that Auburn won, because for the last month, we've had to step into the studio, have to step into the studio and talk about Auburn losing football games. And sure, it took quite some time, but maybe this is what they needed. Maybe this was them turning the corner. We have those conversations to get to. But, man, a win's a win, and I'm with you. You got to be happy for the dudes inside that locker room.
Winning begets winning. Losing begets losing. Staying positive begets positive results, and being negative all the time just gets you negative results, Jacob. So it's impressive for a team that was on a losing streak to go on the road in the SEC and flip the script on – and maybe hopefully flip the script on the rest of the season. I mean, you know, like we said, the rest of the season beforehand is history, and the rest is mystery. But today, Auburn's a winner with a big W over Kentucky and an opportunity to make a statement with a win at over Vandy at home this weekend, get a two-game winning streak going, and then possibly a third against Louisiana Monroe and see what happens the last two games of the season. I know it's kind of – difficult for Auburn fans to digest that I just said you could make a statement with a win at against Vandy at home, but we all saw this weekend that Vandy is a tough, solid football team that's very well coached and fearless.
You better believe
they almost took down number 5 Texas.
They ran with Texas the entire game.
And so Auburn better enjoy the win, 24-hour rule it, maybe a little bit longer, however they do it. I don't know if they have even had a chance to practice yet.
Mm-mm.
I think it comes a meeting later this evening, then they'll start prep. I mean, it's all different than it used to be. And get ready to strap it on. But you got to think that that was a little bit of a confidence bolt shot right into not only the players, but hopefully the coaches too, especially Hugh Freeze. He seems to have lacked some confidence some this season.
No doubt about that.
Not only this season, but you know, and not taking any kind of personal shots at him, but I just know that he knows how depleted this roster was and the dire straits of the program, and it's been hard for him to put on that, you know, confident face that everything's going to be all right. But I think it finally started last week when he basically just started saying, look, we are going to win at Auburn, period. We're going to win. There you go. That's a good step in the right direction. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he got sick late in the week, which was a weird story, had that case of food poisoning, didn't travel with the team. He did not look very healthy on the sidelines Saturday night.
He looked like he
was going to need a barf bag and an IV.
He looked like he had been going through it.
Yes, he did. I've seen that look in the mirror before.
Been there.
And, yeah, I mean, honestly, that's how I looked. How he looked on the sideline Saturday night is how I looked when I had COVID for the first time.
And I can't believe
drained.
Because he took a separate flight. He did not travel with the team. Took a separate flight out to Lexington and coached a football game. For anybody that's been in that position even when you start feeling better, even when it's, I mean, hate to say this, but coming out of both ends, right? You do not want to go travel and then work. And not just work, you got to coach. You got to be on your A game, man. The last thing you want to do, I mean, you don't even want to get out of bed. Even when you're done being quote-unquote sick, you're just trying to recover. So, yeah, whatever it was, credit to him, man. And if there's anybody that is questioning the commitment of Hugh Freeze to this football program, I think that should give you some hope. That should show you what kind of man. I mean, this is a guy that at Liberty coached a football game from a hospital bed in a press box.
Good point.
I mean, are we really questioning his commitment to Auburn? I don't think that's ever been a concern. But to your point, he was questioning himself.
No,
he was
no question.
Questioning whether he was capable of doing this job. And let's be real, Uncle T-Bone, so were you and I. We were questioning whether he was good enough to do this job. And I'm not saying one win over Kentucky is the end-all be-all and the true answer that we're looking for here. But it is positive. It's something to, it's at least something to build on that we have not been able to do in the past 5 weeks.
There's been a ton of questions about Auburn's football program all year. One question that is clearly been answered is the players on this team and a lot of the commitments and recruits have not quit on this coaching staff.
That's true.
I saw Saturday night across the sidelines a team that looked like defensively especially. Now, I know that they had a lot of injuries, and the injury bug had hit them hard up in Lexington. But that team has quit. That team has quit on Mark Stoops. We talked about this last Friday, Jacob, about the buyout and the contract,
yeah,
how much money he's making. It's a ridiculous amount of money. And they did not want to tackle Jarquez Hunter.
And he said that. Did you hear his quote?
I have not heard that yet.
Oh, it's amazing.
They did not want to hit. And when a team does not want to hit any longer, that team has quit.
I believe it was Jarquez that had a clip in the post-game interview on the Auburn Sports Network. Jeff Shearer asked the question, and he said it straight up. He said, yeah, they didn't want to tackle us. They quit. He said they gave up, and that's what we want people to do against Auburn. We want them to lay down and quit and not want to play anymore. And that's exactly what Auburn did. We're going to get into all of the logistics here in terms of the defense, the young guys that played, running the football, Peyton Thorne's performance. We're going to get into all of that today. But the fact of the matter is Auburn went up on the road at night to a Kentucky team that held Georgia to, what, 13 total points and Alabama to 80-something yards, or I guess that's Vanderbilt. But against Kentucky, a team that, no, isn't great, but neither was Oklahoma. Neither was Arkansas. Neither was California. And Auburn still lost all those games. They went on the road, and neither's Missouri. And Auburn found a way to finally beat a team that just wasn't good. And, again, you can be in the mindset of we shouldn't be in this position, but we are. And you have to celebrate this sort of a win. And you could just see it and hear it in the voices of the players and the coaches. And again, Hugh Freeze today during his press conference in the last year and a half, I've never seen him smile and laugh and joke more than he did this morning. And that comes from winning games, man. It's an infectious disease, but in a positive way. And all you can hope now is that it will find its way throughout the entire building.
Yeah, very well said. All successful people, organizations, programs celebrate all wins, no matter how big or small. And I think that's something that Auburn has lost sight of. It's just we haven't had a whole lot to celebrate, and it's been a while since we beat a big opponent. But, you know, in order to learn how to walk, you got to learn how to crawl. And can Auburn take that next step now and use this as a positive momentum? Auburn's got some momentum. Auburn's a dangerous team right now, Jacob. They really don't have anything to lose. They're very healthy for an SEC squad this time of year. Just take a look what you saw across the sidelines against Kentucky.
Sure.
They all of a sudden got a boost of confidence. And they've been real close to flipping the script on several teams already this season. If they can get it together and stay healthy especially. And if Jarquez Hunter, he's not going to run hog wild like he did against Kentucky, but it has been proven that he can run the ball. He's leading the league in rushing. And he starts getting, and he gets going. And then all of a sudden, they start mixing in these big home run type pass plays that Hugh Freeze likes to hit people on. That's a defense that's gaining confidence. There's a young defensive backfield that all of a sudden isn't so young, and they're sure playing aggressive.
Absolutely.
So I'm just saying, you know, I think it's important not to lose sight of the fact of where we've been. But, you know, this could be something where Auburn turns the tables and moves forward.
We'll talk some more about it when we come back. We're just underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number to give us a call. Or you could shoot us a text, 334-784-1067 in the On the Line text box. Diving into the performance a little bit deeper on Auburn and Kentucky when we come back here on ESPN 1067.
You are on the line on ESPN 1067. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. And before we take a deeper dive into Auburn and Kentucky, want to inform you on our Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. And this week's is Auburn High School's Omar Mapson. The junior running back for the Tigers carried the ball, listen to this, Uncle T, against Dothan last Friday. 8 carries, 106 yards, 3 touchdowns, all in the first half. And he also, now sitting at 23 rushing scores, he is Auburn High School's single-season rushing touchdown leader, and the playoffs haven't even begun. Omar Mapson is your Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Auburn High School finishes the regular season undefeated, Uncle T. They get the week off now. They'll have Bob Jones for the first round of the playoffs coming up next Friday. So looking forward to that. Yep.
Well-earned week off. Congratulations to an undefeated season and number one ranking as you move into the playoffs. Auburn High School, congratulations to Omar Jr., complete beast mode. I went to high school with Omar Sr. there, Jacob.
He's a fan, a very loyal listener to ESPN 106.7, and his son is unbelievably talented. And just, again, he's just a junior. He's got a whole another year.
He just reminds me of a young Emmett Smith.
Ooh.
He's not, good you comparison. Know, Emmett wasn't this big, massive Bo Jackson, Herschel Walker type of back. You know, he's only about 5'9"-ish, but he had such a low center of gravity and could just find holes that weren't normally there and get out and get going. And shifty in the red zone and very hard to bring to the ground. I mean, we may have Emmett Smith Jr. here, buddy.
Well, let me tell you one thing. Omar Mapson, he is big and physical. Even when he's not wearing shoulder pads, he looks like he's wearing shoulder pads. But he showed speed on Friday night. He busted one off through the middle and ran away from 3 Dothan defenders. This man hit 21.2 miles an hour running straight down the field.
Let's hope that the University of Florida doesn't Emmett Smith us on this recruitment like they did back in 1987, and we see Omar Jr. heading down the road to Gainesville with a brand-new blue Maxima waving at the cameras.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully not, but he's got a whole other year to figure that out. But, yes, Omar Mapson, Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. Tigers undefeated. They'll get Bob Jones in round one of the playoffs. That'll be at Duck Sanford Stadium next week. And really quickly, Lee Scott Academy, they beat Beamy Comer Friday night, and we thought that they got the help that they needed, and we're told they got the help that they needed, and then it turns out there's about the, 30th tiebreaker rule that they're having to go to now, and non-region games and your wins and the win total of those wins. Crazy. In the alphabetical order, I think they're on letter M of the tiebreaker rule right now. So now Lee Scott's got to beat Real Town this week, and then they have to have Beulah lose to Autauga. So Christian will tell you more about that tomorrow and Friday when he's in here, but just some high school football updates. 334-321-1390. Again, that's the phone number to get you through to us. And want to dive into this Auburn performance a little bit, because I think everybody probably felt the same way when the football game started, right? The first quarter was a disaster. I mean, was a disaster for Auburn versus Kentucky. Auburn starts the game with 11 straight passing plays. Kentucky scores 10 unanswered. Auburn did not run the football one single time. And everybody is thinking the exact same thing.
Yep.
Oh no, here we go again. Here we go again. It was the same type of football we have seen week after week after week, right? And we're like, well, here we go. We're going to let a really bad Kentucky team beat us because that's just how it goes. They go up 10-0. Auburn throws a pick. And it's like, well, here we go. But then Auburn turned it around. Why? What did they do, Uncle T-Bone? What did they start doing that led to great success?
Ran the ball.
They ran the football. They ran the football so much that Jarquez Hunter started breaking records. Jarquez Hunter legitimately had one of the best performances in the history of Auburn football running backs. I want you to start thinking, I'm talking to you old-timers now, all the running backs that have played football here at Auburn. There's been some good ones. Jarquez Hunter had a top five rushing performance in Auburn football history Saturday night. This man, and here's the problem. We've known that it's been there. We've known that it's there. It just hasn't been used. This man touched the football 23 times, carried it for 278 yards and two touchdowns, and single-handedly won Auburn the football game.
You know, I mentioned in there that how I believe Omar Jr. at Auburn High School has a similar running style and build to Emmitt Smith, and he reminds me of that great running back. When I watch Jarquez Hunter get going, Jacob, he reminds me so much of one of my favorite Auburn running backs from history, and that was from the early 90s in James Bostic. When he gets going, he runs like James Bostic. And it gets to a point where defenders, especially late in the game, when James Bostic got rolling, people did not want to hit him. They didn't want any more of going up and getting physical against him. And we clearly saw Kentucky start waving that white flag late in that third quarter. I'll say this, though. As exciting as the win was, not to get negative, I don't know if the play of the game or the plays of the game weren't Jarquez Hunter running up and down the field. It could have been when we got that interception with about 5 minutes left in the go to make sure they didn't make it within a 7-point game. Because when Kentucky started driving the ball down there again, I'm going to be honest with you, I started having feelings of here we go again.
J-A-B-A, perhaps?
El Jabo.
334-321-1390. Andy, you're on the line. I got about a minute before we get to break.
Hey, okay, real quick, let's see here. I'm man enough to say I'm wrong. Uncle T, you called it, and I fought it, but good job on that. And, up until halftime, was there a guy when they called that hurry-up field goal, was there a guy behind the snapper, like with his arms out, not nowhere to go? I was really concerned at that point. But Peyton Thorne gave a thumbs up in the third quarter, and I was like, man, I like his poise. And you're right, man. Keep it up. War Eagle.
Appreciate the call, Andy. 334-321-1390. Spectre, we're about to get to break, but we're going to get to you as soon as we get back. And Freeze talked about the field goal thing today.
I did not like that.
And nobody did. But he said, look, Peyton can't do that. He's like, he has to know at this point in his college football career,
I agree,
you've got to throw the ball away. He said, and we thought that we put him in a play to just let it fly. And you have to know. And here's what I do like, though. That's the same type of answer we've gotten all season long from him. But he added to it. And he said, I'm going to meet with Peyton today. And we're going to put in a play that he likes in that situation when the clock is running out, where it's touchdown or incompletion, and move on. He said, we're putting that in today.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong before we get to break, Jacob. Did we not run the ball the play before and have to burn a timeout?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the play before it was the play to let it rip towards the end zone, because we never even got a throw off to the end zone. How can you not get one throw and shot at the end zone in that situation? Just one. And if you don't like it, then run it in the middle of the field and kick the field goal.
Well, it was here's the breakdown, right? Here's the quick play-by-play breakdown. It was Auburn takes over. It was a 10-play drive, 66 yards, 2.5 minutes, right? Auburn gets the football with 2:24. Jarquez Hunter run. Kentucky timeout. Thorn pass. Thorn sacked with 1:31.
Okay.
Right? Took the sack. He then threw to Rivaldo. He then threw to Camden Brown, the 12-yarder. And then Damari Austin ran. Thorn passed to Fairweather, the 3-yard pass to Fairweather. Timeout Auburn. Thorn sacked. End of the quarter. That's what happened. So it was the run and then the pass. Then they called timeout. But still, in that scenario, you have to know. You've played football long enough, bro. You've got to understand. You've got to understand time and score, time and situation. Know where you are and know what's happening. That's the only thing that hurts you in that situation, other than just throwing it to the other team.
I call it football acumen. Before the play goes off, someone should be screaming into that microphone that he can hear in his helmet, do not take a sack.
It's the only thing that hurts you. All right, we'll talk more when we come back. Spectre, you're going to be first up. When we come back, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, Uncle T-Bone across from me. Let's get to the phone line. Spectre, we appreciate you holding on through the break, my man. How are you on this Monday?
Let me give you my analysis on the game real quick. I saw a depleted Kentucky team, but however, they were strong enough in the first quarter to be strong enough to handle us. We absolutely burned the first quarter. I mean, we might as well have played three quarters of football.
Sure.
We should have routed Kentucky after the first quarter. Well, you know, again, we have Peyton Thorne sitting within the pocket. Pocket did not collapse on him, and throw to ALS, I guess that's his name, KLS.
KLS, yeah, Keandre.
Yeah, with two defenders on either side of him, and one of them broke on the ball and, of course, intercepted it. Well, it didn't hurt us, but as my point to that is we still have him making decisions that as a fifth-year senior he should know better. He just does not have the mentality to read a defense and to option out of a play. And to go on further, I'm not taking anything away from Jarquez, but if we have been facing a Kentucky team that faced Georgia, we might have had a different outcome.
Well, we talked about it last Friday and Saturday on Game Day on Wings, Jack and I. Spectre, I don't know if you're able to listen about the laundry list of injuries that were plaguing Kentucky, with players who were out and even questionable, the majority of which were on the defensive side of the ball. So you're right. It was a very much depleted Kentucky team. Auburn struggled terribly in the first quarter and finally made a commitment to the run, which against a depleted Kentucky team, we were able to definitely move the ball on. I will say this. I think that when we took the victory formation, Auburn was very much in Kentucky red zone and deep in it. Damari Austin almost scored on the play before taking the knee, which would have put us up 31-10. The defense did what it had to do against a Kentucky offense that hasn't been world beaters this year, but they kept them out of the red zone from scoring twice. That's impressive. But I'm with you, man. They, you know, it's a great win. Auburn needed a win, desperately. But there's still some stuff they definitely need to clean up. I'll say this also about the Peyton Thorne. They're going to have to give him a check down coming across the middle. I watched a lot of this film on this game yesterday, and it just still seems to me that we're running our routes 10, 12 yards deep almost on every play. And you're seeing teams year in, game out, dropping back into a zone and faking a blitz and then going back and nickel, even dime sometimes. And there's just in that 10 to 15-yard range, six defenders spread off across the field in a zone. They're going to have to bring some people across the middle and get some dump-off routes because the middle of the field is still wide open where the linebackers should be on pass plays.
Yeah, you know, you brought up a good point on that. When we got, less than 2 minutes, and we're down in the red zone, and we get down on a two-yard line and get a penalty, push us back to the eight.
Yeah.
You know, you're not running up the score by scoring another touchdown.
I agree with that.
And he just wasted a golden opportunity to run an offensive series in the red zone. I didn't understand either. Another thing, let me get back to Peyton again about his decision making. He doesn't know when to ground the ball, and that bothers me because on that third down play, he ran and it was a pitch back to the running back, then the running back pitched back to him.
Mm-hmm.
That made it illegal for him to ground the ball. He should have known that, but that put us back 9 yards to further back to attempt a field goal. And I saw the angle on TV where, if he had been closer, that would have went through the uprights. But being 9 yards back, it just missed going outside. So that was critical. And that's the problem, I'm telling you, I've been having the last 2 years with Peyton.
Yeah.
But like I said, we got lucky, guys, that Kentucky was as depleted as they were. And I'm looking forward to see what Jarquez does against Vanderbilt.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'm not depending on Peyton to do anything, really, to tell you the truth.
Appreciate the call, Spectre. 334-321-1390. Whether it was luck, whether it was skill, whether it was a combination of both, Auburn still wins. And you have to play the teams in front of you. And here's, again, I go back to the fact that Auburn played a depleted Oklahoma team and had them on the ropes. Mm-hmm. Had them getting the buses warmed up and packing up the equipment on the sidelines. And Auburn found a way to lose. This time they found a way to win. And that Kentucky team's not that good. I mean, we could all see that. But the fact of the matter is, they scored 10 points unanswered on you. You went down 10-0 on the road in the first quarter. And your defense held them scoreless since. Couple of big-time stands down there on the goal line. And the offense did enough to win. And I'm with Spectre. I'm with a lot of people. Peyton Thorne is not the future of the program, though. I think we have to remember that. I think a lot of people are concerned with Peyton Thorne playing a lot more games. How many more games does he have? Five? He's got five more games at Auburn. Right? You've got Vandy.
Four guaranteed.
Okay, yeah.
If
so,
he doesn't
get
injured.
Right. Vandy,
probably
A&M,
more like four.
ULM, and Bama. So he has four more games in an Auburn uniform. So I hate to be this way, but like, he's not going anywhere. He's not going to get benched at this point.
Oh, no.
If he hasn't been benched now, he's not going to get benched. And I agree with Spectre and so many people that have called in to this show over the handful of weeks, going on a couple of months. Like, yes, he makes mistakes that should not be made. But he's also not a Heisman-winning quarterback. We just got to accept him for what he is. And let's see if we can win football games anyway. And that's what Auburn did on Saturday. They won anyway. Yeah, he made a bad throw. Had the receivers that ran a couple of wrong routes. But overall, 20 of 26 with 172 yards, one touchdown, one interception, that's good enough. That's good enough. He had five incompletions outside of a pick. Like, that's good enough to win when you feed Jarquez Hunter 23 times and he carries it for 278 yards. And you've got to take that for what it is, and you've got to apply that to what you have coming up the rest of the way. And we got a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Got somebody listening in from Memphis, so shout out to them. That's pretty cool. It says the line for the Vandy game has moved to 6.5. I think they will play very well going back
Auburn
to Jerem Hare.
Catching 6.5.
That's what it says. I have not double-checked on that. Let's go here. I'll go look right now.
You know,
and
Spectre
see.
Says something while you're looking about Auburn being lucky, and they sure were. But, you know, golly, we could use some good luck.
It is 6.5, by the way.
Auburn catching 6.5.
Auburn favored by 6.5.
What?
Auburn is favored by 6.5 points
there's
over
your,
Vanderbilt.
If it smells like cologne, you better leave it alone. Play a spread of the year. Auburn is giving 3-5 Auburn is giving 6.5 points, allegedly. We'll know more tomorrow. To Vanderbilt.
That's what it says according to ESPN.
Has Diego Pavia as their quarterback still. And came into Auburn last year and dominated us.
What do they know that we don't know?
Hello, Abbeville, Alabama. That is very interesting.
How about
that? But get back to what Spectre said. We needed some good luck, and we got some finally.
Sure.
A lot to clean up. I am with him. That play call where they tried to run that triple Lindy or whatever that was dumb.
Auburn's not good enough to do that.
I'm sick and tired of seeing that. I'm sick and tired of seeing the Wildcat. Nobody else is running that crap in college football but us. That is 2009 Gus Malzahn janky play calling. You've got a good enough, talented enough team with a team on the ropes in Kentucky just to get in normal offense, especially running the ball in RPO. And let me say one more thing about Peyton Thorne in the pocket. It is blatantly obvious the guy's not a pocket passer. I don't care what anybody says. Just because he's white doesn't make him a pocket passer. The guy is an athlete. Get him moving around. He throws and plays better when he's running and throwing at the and especially given a run-throw option where he's kind of moving out to his throwing right. Get him outside the pocket. He's not comfortable in the pocket. In fact, most of these kids these days don't grow up just playing in a traditional pocket-style offense.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, how could you be comfortable in this offense with this offensive line that is flat-out just not good at pass pro?
Right.
But they are really good at run blocking and creating holes and doing what they're supposed to do. And Hugh Freeze said it today. He said, man, we realized we were manhandling them up front.
They were manhandling. They were manhandling Oklahoma when they quit running the ball, and Missouri too. Let me tell you something, man. This goes back to that conversation, and this is where I think I am now. I'm super pumped about the win. We needed it. I'm a fan. I pull for my Tigers. I celebrate wins. Thank you very much, War Eagle. We're not in the bottom of the SEC, the complete bottom now. And that's important to me. That's not where Auburn football ever needs to be. It doesn't even need to be sniffing that, Jacob. But what's going to happen next? Is Hugh Freeze going to build on this? Is this coaching staff going to build on this win and realize what they didn't realize in the first quarter offensively, but what they did the other three quarters minus a few goofy play calls? That you have to modify your offense with the weapons you have. Quit. You can't put a square peg into a round hole. And if you've got an offensive line that doesn't pass protect well, figure out a way like California did against us, moving your quarterback around and getting him in places where he's more comfortable throwing.
Were you more impressed, and I'm opening up this question to anybody that's listening or a part of the show, 334-321-1390, are you more impressed from Saturday with Auburn's running performance with Jarquez Hunter, again, 278 yards, 23 carries, 2 touchdowns, carried the team on his back out of Lexington? Are you more impressed with his performance or the young DB's performance? The fact that Auburn was playing, Hugh Freeze said this today, up to 6 freshmen at a time on the defensive side of the football after giving up 10 points early, not being put in a great spot. They shut it down the rest of the way. Which one were you more impressed by, Uncle Tebow?
Jarquez Hunter. I mean, he had a record night. Although I'm super impressed with those young DBs and those young players on that team across the board. Keep getting them in and start playing them more and more. I mean, it'd be all right with me if we go don't just go from six of them playing next week to eight. They're the future. They're the ones that hate losing, it sounds like, more than – they're the ones that aren't even used to losing and just regurgitate it. But Jarquez Hunter ran Cecil the Diesel Collins wild, and if you're an old-school Auburn fan, you know what that means, what he did to us at LSU in 1997. I mean, he was unstoppable. It's not going to be like that the rest of the season, but it also doesn't mean you don't need to make a full commitment to the run the rest of the season. It looks like to me that – combination-wise, on the offensive line, Auburn has finally got the combo they like to really push the run. And if you can run the ball in today's college football world, Jacob, you can control the clock, and you can keep the Diego Pavias of the world on the other sideline staring at you with their mouth agape, drooling, just wanting the ball back. But, oh, no, no, you can't have it. And I'll say another thing about defenses. About 5 years ago, I said defenses were dead in college football. That is no longer the case. The rule change of time of possession has all of a sudden made when all the rules in the world were going towards the offense side of the ball, from targeting to, you know, whatever, the new rule change where that clock's running has all of a sudden put a real value back on defense. And for them to hold somebody to 10 points, you don't have to score. These games don't have to be 55-45 anymore. So you got a struggling offense that's still looking for an identity. Hopefully they found it in Kentucky, the identity we think they should have had all year, run first. That defense stepping up, though, man, that's impressive.
Well, that's the side of the ball that I'm going to defend before we get to break. Whether it's the young guys of Sylvester Smith and Jaron Thompson and Caleb Harris and Jay Crawford and Kayan Lee, like these guys, Keelan Kiemer Crawford, like guys that we have known to be so good, Keldrick Falk, guys that we knew were going to be good 2 and 3 years from the start of this season, but are getting so much playing time because they're so hungry and they want to win and they want to be coached. Notice I paused for dramatic effect. They want to be coached. And man, they're showing up and playing some really daggum good football. And that is so refreshing to see. When you've got guys getting interceptions and making good tackles and in the right spot and making the right checks and making the right reads and just doing the things correctly and just executing what is being called on the field. I don't care that Kentucky's a bad offense, because they are. Auburn flat out shut them down on Saturday night. And they were put in a terrible spot on those first two possessions. They give up 10 points. And now you're defending an offense that's gone three and out, turnover, no points, first quarter's gone in the blink of an eye. And here we go again in the same situation. They could have said, well, we're defending nothing. This is cool. We're done. But they didn't. And the young guys have to give you so much. Between the young guys and the transfers, and I mean, you include Mausi in there. I mean, just so many names that you could go through. Defense was impressive. So that's the side of the football I'll take for Auburn that was most impressive on Saturday. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number. Give us a call. We'll wrap up hour number one when we come back.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Isn't it just refreshing to talk about a win? To talk about the things that Auburn did well? The things that Auburn was able to do successfully and get a win on Saturday versus, well, they played good enough to win. They just couldn't get it done, Uncle T-Bone. I mean, it's just so nice. And honestly, have forgotten what it felt like, because the other two wins that Auburn had, everybody likes to devalue them because it's against bad opponents. And here we are again. Seems like, I'm not talking about people on the show in particular, just fans in general. Like, I don't understand devaluing wins when your team gets it done. Yeah, if you're Alabama and you sneak by a bad team, yeah, you can devalue that if you want to, because they expect.
If you're old Alabama, you can.
Well, that's
that ain't
very
the
true.
Same program or team.
That's very true.
That it's been under Nick Saban.
Which
not
we're
going to
talk a lot about that.
There, but
we're going to talk a lot about that in hour two.
That's not that, you know, they beat down Missouri pretty good, but you talk about an injury riddled team.
Yeah, they beat them down good in the fourth quarter.
I mean, you know, if they don't bring that second string quarterback in the first half, it goes the first half 6-0. They bring Pine in for some reason, have him hucking up balls. I was like,
Drew Pine.
Run the ball and get out of the and see if you can't get some medicine in your quarterback like you did at the hospital against Auburn and get him back in there at halftime. That was a massive error on Eli Drinkwitz.
Tuscaloosa hospitals weren't taking him.
They'd run out of ibuprofen.
Yeah, all the rooms are full. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry about
that,
you're
going to
have
to drive over there to Birmingham. We ain't got any hospitals ready.
I mean, so I'm with you. I get what you're saying, though. And listen, Auburn is in no position as a program to devalue anything right now with its football program. And like I said in the first segment, all wins should be celebrated, and we're celebrating today. Are there things to clean up? Yes. Am I going to be one of those guys? I'm not going to sit here today, Jacob, and be like, man, if you'd have just run the ball with Jarquez, we might be 6-2. I'm not going to be that guy that says we, you know, definitely should at least be 5-3 with wins over Oklahoma and Missouri, and we gagged it up. I'm not going to say we're a bunch of gaggers like we have been this season right here today. I'm happy we won, War Eagle.
I'm proud of you, man. That's
Thanks.
Personal growth. I'm glad that you're not going to be that person that would say those things. Hey, coming up in hour number two, I do want to look around college football a little bit from the weekend because there were some great games.
Oh my gosh,
again, I mean, we may be in the midst of one of the best college football seasons we've ever seen, just across the board. And cannot wait to go around the country, look at what happened, look at some impacts on what's coming up in the college football playoff. First rankings come out a week from tomorrow, so looking forward to that. We'll talk about those, plus dive in more on Auburn and Kentucky. Hour number one is in the books. Stick around. We got a lot more coming at you in hour number two. That's right here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well. As we get underway here in hour number two on the Monday edition of On the Line, it's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Uncle T-Bone. If you missed any of hour number one, all Auburn football in that first hour, talking how Auburn went on the road, gets their first SEC win of the year, taking down Kentucky in Lexington. Talked a lot about it in hour number one, so if you missed any of that, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You'll find it. It's just the show posted to our station website, ESPNAU.com. You can find that. You can find our SEC Football Challenge. That is still going as well, so be sure you get your picks in for that every Friday by midnight. Also, as we get into some more content here in hour number two, want to remind you that hour two, each and every day during our On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. And we are going to talk more Auburn here in this second hour, but we got to look around the country, Uncle T-Bone, and what happened to college football this weekend. We'll start inside the league. We'll start in the SEC. And look, the team that's coming to town this weekend, Vanderbilt, gave Texas everything they wanted. Oh, yeah. I mean, everything that they wanted. Quinn Ewers played pretty good, 288, three touchdowns. Texas played fine. They just got a really good Vanderbilt team once again, but Texas survives 27-24.
That is a salty, salty Vanderbilt team.
Just confident, man. Just, I mean, they've got a swagger I've never seen at Vanderbilt.
Texas almost messed around and found out what it's like in the SEC again.
Yeah, they did.
You know, at home, L to Georgia, and that's obviously a very good Georgia team. Then you got to get yourself regrouped and together and then travel at night or – it was mid-afternoon up to Nashville, of all places, and you think this is going to be a cakewalk preseason, and it's one of the hotter teams in the conference. I mean, anytime you go on the road in the SEC, you got to watch out.
Yeah, you do now. You do now.
No doubt about it.
And as we continue on, we're going to get to a lot of these games. Can we all agree that after we watched Alabama beat Missouri, that Missouri's just not good? I mean, can we all come to that agreement? Yes, they have injury problems. Yes, they're struggling with quarterback play. And I'm not just saying this because Alabama beat them. I'm just saying it because it's true. Missouri's not good. We saw them play Auburn. Auburn should have beaten them by three scores. They're not a good football team. And let's be real, Alabama didn't play that good either. Alabama didn't play good in this game. Is there any Bama fan that is celebrating after their win against Missouri and how they played, I haven't heard it. I haven't seen it. They're still scared to death because of how they played against Missouri. They maybe feel a little bit better seeing how LSU played against Texas A&M. But I'm not a confident, if I'm a Bama fan, I'm not confident at all in what this football team is doing.
Well, Missouri just, you know, the old adage, especially the new philosophy is, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a prayer. And without Brady Cook in there, they have no shot of doing any damage the rest of the season. The crazy thing about it, though, they're sitting right now in the SEC standings over at secsports.com. That's the official Southeastern Conference website. 10th in the league, okay? Missouri is sitting at 10th in the league behind another disappointing team this season, an Ole Miss, both of which are 6-2, yet 2-2 in conference play. And somehow, some way, if they went out, and Missouri's schedule is actually manageable enough to do it, I think.
Theirs is easy.
Well, I don't think it's easy. Oklahoma comes to town. They get a bye week, try and get rested up this week. Then Oklahoma comes to town. They should probably be favored in that game as long as Brady Cook's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to South Carolina, I mean, that's a salty South Carolina team.
They had their bye week this past weekend.
But they host Mississippi – well, they go to Mississippi State, who's terrible, and then they host Arkansas. But if they played their best, they could win those four games and then be sitting there with two losses. And I've been telling people this all year. There's going to be – if it's not this year, it's going to be sooner or later, two-loss SEC team left out of this college football playoff. There's too many teams out there. If you just take a look at the AP Top 25, heck, take a look at the ESPN Top 40 in the power rankings with two losses, right? And if Georgia were to slip up and have three and they were just nail-biters, which they're not, but if they did, could you sit there and justifiably put a two-loss Missouri in front of them?
No.
No. So I'm telling you, there's so many teams right now in the college football playoff hunt and still in the SEC that are not great teams but are sitting there with a good enough record to be under consideration, and Missouri's one of them.
I really do hope. I know they have the college football playoff has their qualifications that they claim that they're going to follow, which, again, nobody's going to hold them to that, so don't really know why they'd even publish it. But I do hope, and this is going to sound like a basketball conversation, which – or right around the corner of. I really do hope that the people on the college football playoff committee use the eye test as a part of their playoff selections. They won't, because they've told us they won't. They told us they're going to use all these numbers and they're going to use these different qualifications. But, man, the eye test has to be a part of it. And that's something where the BCS always fell short of, right? That was always such a huge complaint of the BCS system. It's like, it's you did it all based off computers. And we were like, all right, that's not good enough. So now let's get the humans involved. But now the humans are involved, and they claim that they're using all these different rules to justify their decision. But yet, last year, they didn't put Florida State in because of the eye test of how they would be without Jordan Travis. And so, to what you're saying here, will there be three lost teams that are better than two lost teams, better than one lost teams? Yeah, probably. But how can you justify putting certain teams in? I think is really going to get... it's going to get nasty here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'll let some of the purists go through and give me all the qualifications and break it down that it's, you know, not the team that deserves to be in, but the best team. I heard that beat into us last year over and over again. And if it was the best team that should have been in, then Georgia should have been in. And guess what? They probably should have been in over Alabama, who beat them in the SEC championship game, because they were all banged up. They were a better team than Alabama last year.
They're a better team.
But they didn't deserve to be in. But you know what I'm saying? Well, at least I thought they were, but the committee didn't, or they were influenced enough not to. And you can't sit here and tell me that ESPN and TV rankings and branded teams won't be given preferential treatment like they always are, because they always have been and they always will be. So, yeah, it's a more interesting system. There's way more teams still involved in it. Ole Miss is still a dark horse contender to get in the college football playoff.
And got a sneaky good win against Oklahoma. That Oklahoma team gave them everything they wanted.
I'll say this. That was the best Oklahoma had played in weeks.
Yeah.
So hats off to Brent Venables for a program this season that's going nowhere. He's obviously going to be on the hot seat. But the game of the week in the SEC and in the nation happened in College Station. And what an exciting football game that was. And this is the story that no one had going into this season, that Texas A&M right now, heading into the last weekend of October, maybe the first weekend of November, I guess now, is your leader in the SEC at 5-0 and 7-1. And they were left for dead after Notre Dame beat them week one. And, boy, they're red hot. And they just beat a red hot team. And they ended up taking them down pretty hardcore.
Yeah, that Marcel Reed came in and lifted Texas A&M on Saturday night, 38-23. Not only did they win, they dominated the second half against LSU. They were down, remember, they were down 17-7 at the half. And you're thinking, all right, LSU's going to do what they've done all season long. And they're going to let Garrett Nussmeier carry this thing away, and he's going to give them another big-time win. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, here comes Texas A&M. Here comes Marcel Reed, who didn't throw much. What did he have? Two passes, I think? But he ran for three scores when they needed him. They needed him, and they called his name, and he got it done. And A&M wins 38-23. I didn't have this. I had LSU winning. I did. I'm an LSU believer. I think I'm still an LSU believer. But, man, Garrett Nussmeier, 25 of 50 Saturday night. He threw the ball 50 times. And they ran it just 22, and he completed only half of them. 400 yards, sure. 200 or two touchdowns, great. But he had three interceptions, and A&M was able to capitalize on that.
Defensive struggles have plagued LSU.
Yep, and this is the first time in a while that it's really come back to get them.
And a lack of a running attack has as well. I mean, you see what kind of dynamic quarterback Jaden Daniels is in the NFL, and what he did yesterday.
What a play. What a play.
And you can't get to a playoff with him as your quarterback. And the Commanders, who have been terrible for quite some time, might make the playoffs with him at the quarterback. I mean, come on, LSU. It's not going to get any easier for Texas A&M. And this is a danger Will Robinson game right here. You talk about emotional letdown going into a nasty, loud environment in Columbia, South Carolina, with some of the most rabid, loyal fans in the SEC. And those cocks will be a-crowing loud 6:30 this Saturday. Texas A&M, number 10 in the nation, heads to Columbia. watch out for that upset alert.
Yeah, you just wanted to say that on the radio. That's okay. A&M, A&M has a tough schedule. LSU, though.
Yeah, they'll have New Mexico State after South Carolina. Then they travel here to Auburn. And then, I mean, this could be a possible elimination game. But if they both only have one loss,
yep.
How could you eliminate either one of them? They'll host Texas in that old, old ancient bitter rivalry renewed on November 30th.
Good news for LSU, though. That's only their second loss of the year, and it's only their first one in SEC play, right? They lost their first game against USC, which gets worse by the day, but they have a win over Ole Miss. They have a chance to bounce back, right? It is not this weekend. They have a bye. And then next weekend, they play Alabama. They host Alabama. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a night game in Death Valley. After that, they play at Florida, home for Vandy, home versus Oklahoma. So as painful as this loss may have been for LSU, remember the statement that we've continued to say, don't judge a team based off of 1 week and 1 week alone. Mm-hmm. This is a team that still beat Ole Miss. It's a team that still beat Arkansas, had to come back and beat South Carolina. They have more to prove, I think. But they still have opportunities to do so, and it starts with Alabama in 2 weeks.
Yeah, this is a resilient team. They have already proven that they could have been eliminated from the college football playoffs. Week one loss, Kylie, they got to be kicking themselves too for that loss against USC. But they'll be on bye this week, and then you said it in Death Valley, they'll host Alabama. That will be a college football playoff elimination game fact.
You think so?
No question about it.
You think LSU, if they lose that one back-to-back, even with wins over Florida, Vandy, Oklahoma,
oh, yeah,
they can't bounce back?
Oh, yeah, they'll have three losses, and so would Alabama. The loser of that game's done. They're done.
Bama's on a bye this week, is that right?
That
Bama
is
have
correct.
A bye week?
They take a bye week every year before the LSU game, and the SEC's given them that privilege for quite some time.
Shocker.
Well, that office is where?
Birmingham.
And so
you call it something different.
Yeah, we'll just hold off on that. I'll say this, that's a loser leave town match.
I think so.
No question
very
about
well
it.
Could. How big
I just
of a
don't
game?
See that there can you can justifiably with as many teams out there across the nation. I mean, you would have to be, I'm telling you, Georgia under special circumstance with some type of one loss at Ole Miss and then making the SEC championship game and losing by a loss and have three losses and get in. A three-loss SEC team, not named Georgia, this season does not get in.
Think about not even, I guess, with the college football playoff implications, but even without them, how big of a game is that about to be for Kalen DeBoer?
Huge. Let me tell you what, there are still plenty of Alabama fans, and for good reason, that have questions about his leadership in coaching in Tuscaloosa and whether or not he really and truly is the long-term answer. And I had one in particular that I respect and know very well who knows ball, mentioning two words to me over the weekend when I saw him at Plaza Fest. You want to guess what those words are?
Hmm.
Kurt Cignetti.
Hmm.
Old Nick Saban coach, too, up
and
there
he's
in
got
Indiana.
Indiana churning right now.
They
boy.
Are impressive.
He's got them going hard. They had Washington this week. A college game day was in Bloomington.
A lot of people were picking an upset there.
Of course, yeah. A lot of people had Washington coming in and kind of spoiling the party right on Kurt Cignetti in Indiana. And it started out as a pretty good game. I watched it. Started out as a good game. But the Hoosiers just did what they do. And that was with a backup quarterback, too. 31-17, Hoosiers win. They've got Michigan State coming up this weekend. A bye week. No, Michigan State, Michigan, bye week. And then they go to Columbus. And they take on Ohio State, who looked, as a word you like to use, putrid against Nebraska. Looked terrible against Nebraska.
Boy, they
Saturday.
Got away with a questionable
yes, they did.
Targeting call that got overturned. Which is just baffling to me, this rule now. If you're going to have it in the rule book, to me, that was targeting. The guy launched. He didn't get helmet to helmet, but he got launched towards the head and neck area. And, Nebraska was impressive. That's a gritty Nebraska program right now. would have been a huge win for Matt Rhule.
I want to talk some more about college football when we come back. Other results around college football that had big applications, plus a newest AP poll. And then Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us coming up in just a little bit. You can still get in on the conversation, 334-321-1390. Back after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Continuing to talk about the biggest results from college football this past weekend. What other games caught your eye, Uncle T-Bone? Any other games that you were able to watch on Saturday or at least caught the score and had to go back and catch some highlights and it made you kind of take a double take? And what other games you have on this weekend that you want to talk about?
Well, I believe BYU went down to UCF.
UCF and Malzahn were favored at home again.
And it was the weirdest again. Line to me. It's one of those where it's like Vegas is trying to hook you, and ain't no way BYU should be while they're undefeated and playing really good football.
Ain't no way UCF was going to lose that game.
Sorry dog Gus Malzahn in Central Florida, who have just been they have been such a disappointment. Remember, people were talking about them this year being one of those possible teams that could go into the college football playoffs.
This was such a classic Gus game.
It was, and they were terrible. And Central Florida fans have had about enough of Gus. And quite frankly, I can't blame them. SMU at Duke, that was a sneaky good football game. And SMU, looky there, this is one of those teams that I'm talking about that's out there that you normally wouldn't have any kind of consideration for the college football playoff. And they are clearly in the mix, sitting there with one loss. Good win over a Duke team that now goes to Miami. Speaking of Miami, just absolutely killing Florida State and their old rivals.
SMU, that their loss is out of conference, too, so keep that in mind. They could still compete for the ACC.
Who'd they lose to?
It
was a weird loss. Was it Nevada?
It was BYU. It was BYU they lost to, 18-15 to BYU. So
there we go.
I hate, you know this, I hate the term good loss.
Right.
I hate the term good loss, but if there is something to fall into that category, I think that one's getting better by the day.
In the top 25, Kansas State had an in-state rival game against Kansas. Do you think you could play your in-state rival at least after Halloween? I mean, and same thing with Michigan playing Michigan State. I'll have thoughts on that in a second. But Kansas State survives. Kansas, who was
bad.
Jacob Hillman's dark horse to make the college football playoffs.
And you jumped on that boat, too.
I did, man. They were really good last year. They've not been good this year, but Kansas State hangs in there and gets a W, and then Michigan and Michigan State, again, getting into a nasty fight in a football game, this time out on the field, not in the tunnel. Michigan survives Michigan State. I don't think that Michigan team's very good, and I know that Michigan State team's not very good, and you said it earlier. Indiana, with a very manageable last four games of the season, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State and Purdue,
yep,
they can drop that game against Ohio State and easily still be considered for the college football playoffs.
Yeah, the problem for them is the teams ahead of them in the Big Ten is Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State, which Penn State is still not good. I'm sorry, they're not. They had to score two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to get the lead, the win that they did, 28-13. And they also lost Drew Aller. So
yeah,
you got to keep that in mind, too.
Ohio State this week at high noon. That's a team I don't think they've ever beaten them, it feels like. And if they can't do it this season, but without Drew Aller, they're going to be in trouble.
Ohio State favored by 4.5 points this Saturday, the big noon kickoff. The other game that I wanted to talk about, the American dream is over, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Army and Navy. Army didn't play. They were on a bye week, and they're probably thanking the schedule makers for not having to play this weekend, because Navy got exposed. Navy got exposed in MetLife Stadium. And I don't know what I hate more, the fact that Navy lost or the fact that it was Notre Dame that beat them.
I'll tell you what, if Notre Dame had not stubbed their toe against Northern Illinois, they'd probably be ranked second in the country right now.
They'd be top five, probably.
I know there's a lot of haters out there of the Fighting Irish. I'm not one of them.
I am.
They are playing really good football right now.
They're dominating.
And the rest of their schedule is extremely manageable, too. I believe the only ranked team that they get is Army.
It is.
And
that's at home at Notre Dame.
And, boy, what a luxury of facing one of these Service Academy teams after you faced one of these Service Academy teams. You'll be ready to play. I believe they have Florida State. They're on bye this week. USC still looming out there.
They have Virginia on that schedule, too.
And Virginia, who...
okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they got beat down by poor old Mack Brown in North Carolina this week. So, that ACC is kind of weak, man.
That's what I've said. But we have certain people in this building that won't accept that answer.
I think that Pitt is a little bit better team than they're getting credit for.
God, I remember watching them early this season.
And they will travel. This could be an elimination game. Although SMU only has one loss and Pitt is undefeated, Pitt will travel to SMU in Dallas, Texas this Saturday night. So here we are.
SMU and Pitt are this weekend?
Yeah.
How about that? That's the third and fourth team in this ACC.
There's a lot of these games that all of a sudden are going to start working this out a little bit and give you a clearer picture. But this is as murky a picture as I've ever seen in the playoff world, college football playoff world, since it first started in 1998. I mean, Tennessee's up there. They'll host Kentucky this week and kill them. We saw what Kentucky was. But they'll play Georgia, and then Georgia will play Ole Miss. Alabama and LSU will play. You know, A&M still got to play Texas, right? So you see it in the Big Ten. Indiana's still going to get Ohio State, Penn State, and Ohio State. The leaders are higher up than the ACC, Pitt and SMU. These things are going to begin to work themselves out, but there's still a lot of teams out there that can, with the possibility of getting in, like Washington State sitting at 7-1. Forgot about them. They're in the Pac-2, already conference champions. I think they've already played Oregon State, or have they not? Or do they play at the end of the season now? And so, what if they only have one loss? You gonna leave them out? And look at Colorado and
look
Deion
at Colorado.
Got
they
it. Continue
you have
to win games.
I don't know how.
And if they only have two losses, is it going to be influenced by prime time itself? And you're going to leave them out? I mean, there's still a lot of possibilities out there, Jacob.
Ain't no way they leave Deion Sanders out of the college football playoff. Mm-hmm.
Not gonna
Ain't
happen.
No way they leave him out. And look, you've got to give them credit because they have bounced back significantly and have played pretty good football. Now, I don't care what the competition is. I don't care. I mean, they have done something that not many people thought they could do. They qualified for a bowl game this weekend. They're 6-2, 4-1 in the Big 12. Like, they're still alive in that conference race, which is unbelievable to think about. I'm pulling up the Big 12 standings as we speak right now, because you look at this, you have BYU up there, 5-0, Iowa State 4-0, Kansas State and Colorado 4-1. And I don't have time to look at all their schedules, but let's see. Do Iowa State and BYU play each other? Nope, they don't. That's Iowa State plays Kansas State. Does BYU, who do they have left down the stretch? They have nobody, so they'll be fine, but they already beat Kansas State. So a lot of these will be solved, but not all of them will be solved. I think we're going to find that coming down the home stretch in all these Power Four conference races. We'll talk a little college football, talk some Auburn football and Auburn basketball with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us after this.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Across from me is Uncle T-Bone, and glad to have this guy back on the show. Been a while since we've been able to talk about a victory. Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Man, how are you on this Monday? I know you're doing okay given the result on Saturday.
Yeah, the vibes are high around the office, and yeah, you're right. It's great to be talking about a win and getting back on track. right here at the end of October, right as we enter the home stretch of the season, and quite literally the home stretch with these last three home games coming up in November.
Well, you were in Lexington, a part of the crew for the Auburn Sports Network, and you guys did a phenomenal job, as you always do. So tell us what you saw from Kroger Field there in Lexington as Auburn gets a win, a desperately needed win over Kentucky 24-10.
Yeah, it felt like a convincing win, even with the first quarter that really was a tough first quarter for Auburn. Kentucky jumps out to a 10-0 lead, but this group is resilient. These young guys are really ready to go to war no matter their record, and they want to finish this season strong. So obviously, after giving up those 10 points, they scored 24 unanswered, and I thought it was a really impressive showing by the defense after that first quarter, and how they just stuck together and kept pushing against the different changes. Obviously, Kentucky benched Brock Vandegrift in the second half, and we didn't see him. It was a different look with their backup quarterback, who was more of a running threat. And that was not an issue. And then obviously we know what the offense really ran through with Jarquez Hunter rushing for a career high 278 yards. That's the fourth highest in Auburn history, behind guys like Bo Jackson and Trey Mason and Guy Kendall. I think that's his name. He played in 1944. So those are the kind of performances that performance matched up with. And I just think it's really, really telling how this team continues to persevere through the season, and they get that win, and it builds a lot of momentum going forward. Peyton Thorne, after that interception he threw in the first quarter, I think he was, after the interception, but he was 15 of his last 16. I think it might have been 16 of his last 24 or something around that number. It was a really impressive showing. The offense started taking what the defense gave them, and I think that should be the motto going forward is just keep feeding Jarquez Hunter. He got 27 carries or 27 touches, including four receptions, and Peyton Thorne was really smart with the football.
Well, I think you just answered a little bit of the question I was going to ask you, Jacob. Peyton Thorne goes 20 for 26, 172 yards, one touchdown, one interception in the game against Kentucky Saturday night. I don't think that Auburn can afford to go down 10-0 in the first quarter against a Vanderbilt team, especially if Diego Pavia is 100%. They are saying he is a little banged up and had to leave the game against Texas temporarily. What does Auburn have to do to make sure that they're not down 10-0 in this game after the first quarter at home Saturday?
Yeah, it does start with, I think, the defense. I've noticed this throughout the season. It seems like Auburn, when given the choice, elects to defer and get the ball in the second half and put the defense out there first. And many times that's led to a long, sustained drive by the opposing offense. And it doesn't always result in a touchdown. I think the defense has done a great job at not allowing those first possession touchdowns. But it does really wear down the defense when you give up a six-minute drive like you did against Missouri or a four-minute drive against Kentucky. And they obviously bounced back in both of those games and played a great middle part of the game and end of the game against Kentucky. It did wear down at the end against Missouri, and I think that's something that's more of what you would expect from the Vanderbilt offense. Kentucky's offense has struggled all season long, so the defense did its job, and I think it's important to get off to a good start. Now, obviously, that can quickly change. If Vanderbilt wins the toss and gives the ball to Auburn, then you want to get off to a hot start, and that's something that has been a struggle for Auburn. It really has been a struggle to get started for both the offense and defense. 2 weeks in a row, I guess really 3 weeks in a row with the Georgia game, Auburn starts behind the chains. They run out the kickoff and get a penalty on the kickoff. That can't happen. And Coach Freeze mentioned that in his press conference today. I don't know if there's a kickoff into the end zone. I don't know if Auburn's taking it out anymore. I think they're going to take the 25-yard line and go from there and try to build some positive momentum with 75 yards to go to the goal line. So I think that's what's important is really you don't have to have a three and out on defense, but just not letting them cross midfield and flipping the field and then off on offense, not going three and out, not losing yards on that first down play.
Yeah, you mentioned it, the penalties on kickoffs or just the early down penalties that Auburn has seemed to hurt themselves with is something Freeze was asked about time and time again today. And just he was simple. I mean, he made it simple. He was like, man, we're just starting so behind that it's tough to execute what we have called and what we have planned. And, of course, the plan on Saturday early was to throw the football. He admitted that because of how good Kentucky's run defense had been, but it was nice to see the adjustment mid-game where, let's be honest, I don't think that had been there time and time again this year where Auburn said, you know what, this isn't working, and this is, let's go with what's working, and man, did it do so against Kentucky on Saturday.
Yeah, Chris Freeze mentioned it today where he, in the back of his mind, he kept wanting to throw it, but he just stuck with Jarquez Hunter, and I think that's really the catalyst with this offense. It's something I've said in conversations in the past. I think 27 touches for number 27, that is the recipe for wins, and that's what happened on Saturday. He got exactly 27. You want to give him 30, that's fine with me as well, but I think that Jarquez Hunter, he just really does get better. The more he touches the ball and the more he gets in a rhythm. And the offensive line, let's give them a lot of credit as well. I think that they really stuck in there. I noticed, and this is on the interception that Peyton Thorne threw, they had an incredible blitz pickup. That came from Jarquez Hunter, but the offensive line really held in there. And it was just a weird play. I think Coach Freeze mentioned Malcolm Simmons ran the wrong route. That's something a young guy is going to do. So I think the offensive line is continuing to improve, and the run game is where they are thriving. I thought Braden Joyner was impressive at the left guard position in his first start this season. He had his moments. He's got more to work on as a young guy, but he was impressive and really opened up some holes for Jarquez.
Well, Jacob, it's almost time for Auburn University basketball. Those words haven't in my lifetime much been said. In late October, the Tigers went up yesterday to Greenville, South Carolina, handled Furman with an exhibition basketball win. I believe the season is 1 week away. Is that correct? Talk about what happened in that 83-62 victory against Furman, and then give us the rundown on what's going to happen with the season opener.
Yeah, obviously I can really only go by what the stats, the box score says, that there was no streaming of the game. And I saw some social media highlights. Ja'Kai Howard, he's going to be really fun to watch. Hot headed for those two young guys. They're going to be two great players for Auburn as the years go on. But I think what I noticed from the box score is you win by 20 points and you shot, I think it was 18% from deep. That's a really good sign for this team. Obviously, your first exhibition game, you might not be locked all the way in with your shooting form. You might take a few games to get that going. So I like that. The one thing that I would look at as a potential concern is that Auburn fouled a lot. Now, what was the officiating like? I don't know.
Bad.
I think maybe they were probably calling it tight, and that's weird to do for an exhibition game in the second to last weekend of October. So. Regardless, I just think that this was a really good test for Auburn to go on the road and face a decent mid-major in Furman and just get those reps in, let these guys gel together because a lot of them are playing together for the first time. J.P. Pegues, he didn't put up flashy numbers or anything, but I think it's very important for this guard play to really figure things out before you get into those early season matchups, especially when you go to Houston. Then you're going to go to Maui and then Duke. Those are going to be really tough matches. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw what Duke did to Arizona State last night, but goodness gracious, that is going to be a really good team this upcoming season. So I think this basketball team is really set up for success, and we're going to get to see them for the first time on Friday night at Neville Arena in that charity exhibition matchup against FAU. Tickets are still available, by the way, AUBTIX.com. Those proceeds go to the Melton Scholars Program, a really great program that Coach Pearl and his program are pushing. So that's a great opportunity to go see the Tigers in Neville Arena, especially if you don't get the opportunity much to see them throughout the season. So Friday night, 7 Central, we're going to have a broadcast. It's going to be streaming only. So it'll be on the Auburn Tigers app. It'll be Andy Bergstrom, Brad Law, and myself on the call for that one.
Yeah, but that's not going to be on the radio or anything. That won't be on our station websites. That is strictly through the Auburn Sports Network, right?
That is correct. Our first broadcast on Wings 94.3 FM will be for the Vermont matchup next Wednesday.
God, next Wednesday? That's so crazy to think about it. I mean, we're just over a week away, and women's basketball right around the corner. We have some news on that coming up. And so some of the stats from Auburn in this exhibition against Furman, and again, it is an exhibition, but Janai had 18 points, Pettiford had 13 points, Chad Baker-Mazzara had 13 points, Cheney and Ja'Kai Howard both had 10. I mean, how many is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Nine players scored, if my math is correct right there. I mean, that's a positive sign for Auburn basketball.
Yep. Yeah, it's something that Coach Pearl preaches. It feels like every single year he builds depth with his roster, and he has done exactly that with this team as well. You know, like those names that you just mentioned, we know the likes of Janai Broome, Chad Baker-Mazzara. Denver Jones didn't have his best shooting performance yesterday, but we know that he's going to be a great player. Miles Kelly didn't even play. He's still recovering from his illness. And obviously the new guys like J.P. Pegues, Ja'Kai Howard, Jaheim Hudson-Turtle, I think he's going to make more of an impact this season than some might have thought, especially at that four position. And then you have guys like Dylan Cardwell, Chris Moore that have made impact for the last 4 years and are entering their senior season. So, yeah, it's going to be great to see that depth once again this season. I think that's going to – it's interesting because last year I don't think it was really, evident in the non-conference games because you dominated so many of those. And that was quite frankly the case in conference play as well. I think Auburn won all of its, pretty much every win was by double digits if it didn't lose. And then this year, that's probably not going to be the case. You're going to be playing much tougher competition, especially in November and December, and we'll see how much of an impact that depth has.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He's with us every Monday here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Before we let you go, outside of Auburn football, men's basketball, plug else, what's going on around Auburn athletics?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. We're officially in crossover season, which is always a lot of fun, and it means that we're getting towards the postseason of some of these fall sports, including Auburn soccer. They fell in the regular season finale, but they are headed for the SEC tournament in Pensacola this next week, so November 3rd through 10th. The seedings and the game times, they're going to be announced on Wednesday. There's some weather makeups to be made up in the rest of the SEC, so that will finalize all of that. So stay tuned to AuburnTigers.com for those game time announcements as well as the matchup. Auburn volleyball is looking to bounce back on Wednesday against Ole Miss at Neville Arena, so head out to Neville Arena, support those Tigers. I believe that game is at 6:30 Central. So go out, support those Tigers. And then Thursday, women's basketball has its exhibition against LaGrange. That is at 6 o'clock Central at Neville Arena. And then they get their season started on Monday against the regular season started against Southern Illinois. So Britt Bowen and Dr. Larry DeShera are ready for another great season of Auburn women's basketball. Coach Shea is ready to take that program to another level after returning to the NCAA tournament last season. So there's a lot going on. Like I said, fall sports wrapping up. Men's golf's at the East Lake Cup right now. That's reserved for the top four teams in the country last year. They're battling it out to close out their fall slate. Carson Baca is leading the way individually there at 4-under right now.
All so, right.
I believe that's on Golf Channel and everything, so you can tune in for that. If you want some golf action, cross country's got the SEC Championship in College Station on Friday. Equestrians at Oklahoma State, number one in the country. That's the Auburn Tigers, number one in the country. So you've got plenty of Auburn action to follow this upcoming week. And we'll talk all about it tonight on Tiger Talk at 6 Central at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. Coach Freeze, Coach Jay, talking everything Auburn football and Auburn women's basketball on Wings 94.3 FM.
There you go. I was going to ask you to plug it, so you did that already. Yep, Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com. Tiger Talk, 6 o'clock tonight live at Baumhauer's, or you can catch the radio broadcast on our sister station. Jacob, thanks so much for your time, my man. Always a pleasure, and we appreciate you hopping on.
I appreciate the time, as always. War Eagle, guys.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Crossover season is correct, man. All the fall sports wrapping up, and the winter sports about to get underway. You heard him mention women's basketball for Auburn. I do want to let people know, in case you have not heard, ESPN 106.7 is now the home of Auburn women's basketball. Football, men's basketball, baseball is Wings 94.3. Auburn women's women's basketball will be right here on ESPN 106.7. So that will start with the exhibition game this Thursday. That will be broadcasted here on ESPN. Most of their games are Thursdays and Sundays. Not always the case, but most of them, especially during conference play, will be on Thursday evenings and Sunday afternoons. And so on those Thursdays and those weekdays that they do play, the drive will be ended short, just a few minutes, by about 15. And we'll have all the broadcast of Auburn women's basketball right here on ESPN 106.7. Let's take our final break, come back, and wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Been a lot of fun, man. It's almost like winning is fun. It's almost like winning makes life just a little bit more enjoyable. Uncle T-Bone, what a crazy idea. What a wild, wild thing to experience on this Monday afternoon. No, all jokes aside, we have had a lot of fun, and even through the bad times, we were still having fun. It was at your expense, I guess, because fans were, you know, miserable, but it seems like maybe Auburn has turned the corner. So a lot of good conversation today about Auburn football against Kentucky. Talked about some college football, some results from over the weekend, and who's real, who's not, who's still alive, games that are coming up this weekend, and kind of some implications with the college football playoff. And then just talked to Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Just got off the phone with him. He gave us his thoughts on Auburn football, also on Auburn basketball, their exhibition win against Furman this weekend, and then he talked about everything going on around Auburn athletics. Busy, busy time, including Tiger Talk tonight. You can catch that over on our sister station, Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com. Goes on the air at 6 o'clock. You can catch that. And then if you have not been able to catch it, we have a replay of Tiger Talk on Thursdays at 6 right here on ESPN 106.7. So if you can't catch it live on Mondays for whatever reason, you can catch that re-aired right here on ESPN. And speaking of what's on the air coming up tonight, how about Game 3 of the World Series between the Dodgers and the Yankees? Can L.A. take a commanding lead in New York, Uncle T-Bone? Are you a World Series guy? Do you watch the World Series at all? Keep up with it? Listen to it?
No doubt about it. That first game was very exciting.
That first game was awesome.
And Freddie Freeman pulling the Kirk Gibson act on the Yankees, and the stadium out there cranking up "I Love L.A." that song, and it was super exciting. We'll see what happens when they go east and go into the Bronx tonight. I think New York will probably have something for them.
Speaking of baseball, really quick, I watched on Netflix the entire series yesterday. They just released their 2004 comeback Red Sox documentary about the 04 Red Sox. It's incredible. For anybody that wants to go, I loved it because I was a Red Sox fan. I am a Red Sox fan, but it was a really, really good documentary on Netflix. Highly recommend.
Jacob, have you had any kind of chance to look over the AP Top 25 since it's dropped?
I have.
At the end of the show.
Yeah, there's like no changes in the top 15, except a tie at 11th, which is so stupid, so dumb.
Yeah,
ties are for Europe. This is America. We don't tie anything here.
And Clemson being tied.
Yeah.
Name a couple of teams in the top 10 who aren't going to make it.
That aren't going to make it to the playoff?
Right. Do they do a BCS rankings anymore?
No, you have your AP poll. They'll still do the AP poll. They'll still do the coaches poll, but the playoff poll is the one that matters.
When does that drop?
The first one is a week from tomorrow.
Okay. Name a couple of teams in the top 10 right now that won't make it.
Tennessee. Ooh. Tennessee won't make it.
Think Penn State makes it?
Probably. Who do they have left? Let's see what they have left.
You think they're fool's gold?
They've been fool's gold since they could barely beat West Virginia week one. They have Ohio State, Washington, and that's pretty much it.
Oh, yeah, they're going to get in.
They're going to get in as a one-loss Big Ten team that does – they are going to be the first team that takes advantage of not playing in their conference championship game. You watch it right now. They're going to be a one-loss Big Ten team that doesn't play in their conference championship game, and they're going to make the college football playoff and get exposed.
Out of all the teams in college football that would benefit from the college football playoff, it was Penn State historically. What about in the next 10? Name two teams who will make it.
Ooh, okay, so who's not in the top 10? So 11 through 20?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. as of right now, Indiana. But I don't know if they're going to get in because of the other three teams ahead of them. I'm also going to pick Boise State.
Yeah,
I'm going to pick Boise State. Kansas State's a good pick, too. Pitt's a good pick, too.
Pitt is a good pick there. I think that with
Pitt still plays
schedule,
SMU, I think. They play this weekend.
Yeah, I still think they got to play Clemson as well. So I don't think that Pitt can afford two losses unless they win unless somehow they're the two-loss ACC champion.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. A lot of good football teams that could find themselves in or out.
Long way to go as we start November.
That's right. Hey, you'll be back on Friday, Uncle T-Bone. Appreciate you being in here. I'm back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he is Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.